So it's just you and one other person at the bus stop or the elevator. The silence is uncomfortable, but would saying something dumb be even more uncomfortable? Maybe you won't find out. Or, armed with the book today's guest co-wrote, maybe you'll take a stab at conversation. But choose carefully the portions of the book to take seriously. It's called What to Talk About, and it's written by a journalist and a comedian. Our guest is Rob Bedecker. He's a writer and performer and co-founder of the Casper Hauser Comedy Group. Co-author Chris Collin is an author and journalist widely published in the New York Times and Wired, among other publications. Both live in the Bay Area. Rob Bedecker, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So a journalist and a comedian walk into a bar is basically what happened here.
Where's this one going? I'm so curious about the punchline.
What process led to this book?
We both realized that we're doing okay at conversation, but there's probably a gap. We think it's about 7.3% of the time where we actually would like to talk to someone, or we would like to make the conversation more interesting, take it further, and we just fall short. So Chris and I thought, why not write a book about it? We can use ourselves as subjects and hopefully try to figure out a way to enrich our day-to-day conversations.
I know people probably shouldn't ask these things of performers, but, I mean, are you guys shy?
Yes. I'll speak for myself. I am a hardcore introvert, and I don't know if this was your presumption, but it's true that in my experience, most performers, I would say the majority, tend to be on the introverted end of the continuum.
Is it, and not to get too deep into the psychology here, but...
Go for it. Dig, man. This is your opportunity.
Is it that you're more at ease being able to present something to someone instead of having it be a two-way sort of thing?
That might be it. There's a weird sort of double thing going on, for lack of a better word. When you're on stage, you can be at the same time sort of vulnerable and at a distance. You know, you can be expressive, but it's not a conversation, and so I think you see a lot of comedians and performers really willing to open themselves up in what seems like a risky space, but for them there's a sort of protection of the spotlight. Is this getting too abstract? Or you?
No, it's not. I understand. I've been a local theater performer myself off and on through the years, but yeah, I can appreciate the idea of being there in the sort of cone of light. That cone of light.
That's the phrase I was looking for. Thank you, Jeffrey. And may I ask, are you on the introverted end of the continuum as well?
In theory. I think that may be wearing off over the years.
Yeah, that's true. It does change. I think it's really important to realize these aren't fixed categories. I think I've become more extroverted as I age.
So if you're you are a performer,
yeah.
Does the performer in you, I mean, is it something that is just shut off when you're trying to have conversations with people? I mean, obviously you don't want to do like a, hey, how you doing kind of thing standing at the elevator.
Yeah, there's nothing worse, right? Somebody who's always on and
right.
Sort of doing their shtick. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something to learn from performance and to bring it into conversation in a non-obnoxious way, you know? I mean, we're performing all the time. The conversation I'm having with you is different in tone and style than the one I may have with my daughter later on or my colleague. So we're always changing our kind of persona. And you could say it's artificial in a performance, or it's just how we adapt. You know, we're performing in some regard every minute of the day.
But it's a little less self-conscious in basic conversation, or is it more so?
I think that it can be more so. That's where people get crippled. You know, if you think of every conversation as a performance, or if you're kind of paralyzed by how am I going to do in this conversation? How am I going to perform? You can shut down. I think that holds us back. We get too self-obsessed, and we worry, oh, I'm not smart enough. I don't have anything interesting to say. And then we don't say anything at all. And if you can turn the focus onto the other person and become curious, it kind of takes the pressure off. It's not a performance. It's about learning from the other person.
There must be something of a trick then, it sounds like, to getting a sense of, like, you're actually genuinely interested in the person, not just well, not just being like on a talk show and asking questions that elicit responses.
Well, I was going to ask you for advice. What is the trick, Jeffrey?
Well, for one thing, don't ask questions that have yes and no answers, right?
Exactly. It's one of the things we recommend in the book, and it's a great conversation killer. You know, how you doing? How was your day? Nice weather, huh?
These fine, all have, good,
they,
yeah.
They all ask for one-word answers, and then you're at a dead end. And you don't have to make too big of a shift to ask for what we call a story. So instead of, you know, how you doing, I could say, what did you do this morning before you came to the station? Or did you go out last night? Or what are your plans for the weekend? Pretty basic, but I've just opened the door a little bit to get some more kind of color and detail. And from there, I've got a dozen things I can follow up on.
You know, there are other books about how to talk to people. In fact, I think we had two on in the last year. So you must have examined the landscape out there and seen that there were other things, but decided your approach was different?
Better, I think you're saying?
No,
that's not what you said. I just chose to hear that. it's a rich topic, and I think people will see in our book, we've combined, hopefully, a kind of absurd comic vision with some real practical advice. And our take is that, you know, conversation is a little absurd. There's something weird about interacting with strangers, and why not embrace that absurdity and be a little disruptive, be a little unexpected, and have fun with it.
Rob Bettiker, the guest, talking about the book he co-authored, What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. We'll be back to hear more of what he recommends for how to talk to people when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Rob Bettiker is a performer and co-founder of the Casper Hauser Comedy Group. He's half of the writing duo that wrote What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. Journalist Chris Cullen is the other author. Rob joined us by himself in 2014, making it clear the book is somewhat tongue-in-cheek. There are calls from the original broadcast, but since it is pre-recorded, we can't take any today. Rob, when you think about it, is it kind of weird that we need books to tell us how to talk to people? I mean, language is a great gift to our species.
Yeah, it is a great gift. Although the monkeys and dolphins are doing pretty well.
Yeah, but what can they do besides? Eh-eh?
Yeah, they have their own language, don't they? They don't have books, as far as we know. I think we need a book, and maybe an e-book, which you can get as well these days, because of e-books and screens and computers and all of the ways in which we're sucked into ourselves and out of conversation. It's particularly noticeable when you talk to the younger generation. I think it's harder to start a conversation with people that are used to being plugged in.
Which then, but you know, do you end up running the risk of annoying a millennial if you see them in an elevator with their face in their screen and say, hey, did you see that car crash down the street, or whatever the conversation starter might be?
Well, that's a good one. I'm willing to annoy a millennial if it means creating a better world. And I think, you know, this is about that mindset we talked about earlier. Is this a performance or a sort of moment of panic? If you think about this as you know, creating a more civil, a more engaged world, you're actually doing that anxious millennial a service. Maybe they don't have the background in real world talk that you and I were privileged to have before the phones and computers. So give them a gift. Give them a conversation starter. They might be looking for one, but they're just not sure how to get away from the phone.
But, you know, it's interesting you state it that way, because in a sense you are talking about a gift, aren't you? It's not only a gift to sort of reduce your own discomfort and potential terror in a uncomfortable social situation, but also to put them at ease as well. I mean, what benefits you, if you're doing this right, should benefit the other part of the conversation, shouldn't it?
It's a win-win, as they say. And if you can take the focus off yourself, turn your curiosity on the other person, you get both benefits. You give them a starting point, and you And you don't have to worry about talking about yourself. I mean, that's the other trap. There's the sort of crippled, shy person who can't get a word out. And then there's the kind of Cliff Clavin model of just over-talking and over-talking, especially about oneself. So there's a middle ground.
All right. So you guys are obviously not linguists or psychologists. So from whence comes the advice like the good conversation starters in the book?
Well, I want to challenge your assumption, Jeffrey. I'm a psycholinguist by training, so I'm not actually, but we do have an interest in language, and I think you know there's a lot to be mined in language. If I look at your name, Jeffrey, there's already a ton to talk about. I want to know about how you got the GEO spelling.
My mother got it for me from Geoffrey Chaucer, but, you know, a guest in the first hour called me Gregory today, so it still confuses people.
Well, you might try on a new name, Gregory. Maybe that's your fate. Well, see, so now we know that your mom had some interest in Geoffrey Chaucer. That's really interesting. I want to know more about that. And the language has given us a gift by just paying attention to words. What was your question? I forgot.
Whence comes advice like the conversation starters?
Yeah, because we're not trained linguists or psychologists.
Just caring professionals, right?
Just caring professionals and curious humans. And again, it comes from noticing those awkward moments, and we've all had them where somebody walked. You know, we were in an elevator. Somebody looked interesting, and we thought maybe it's worth trying something, or we're on a bus, and think of the thousands of stories right around you when you're on a bus. You know, you don't always want to hear them, but sometimes you can learn something or meet someone that improves your life.
So I wonder how much of this book is meant to be used versus just giving us a good, amusing read. But, you know, when you think about it, the kinds of things that you could do that could be really outrageous could also really prompt a good response from somebody. I mean, you want to do this with every person in the world, I suppose, but if you're in an elevator alone, you just look at the person and say, okay, how do you get the stuff out from under your big toenail?
Yeah. Jeffrey, have you tried that one? I'm curious about the response.
No, it just came to mind. I have to try it sometimes.
Yeah, your point is a good one. Be a little disruptive. And, you know, some of the recommendations in our book are pretty out there, but the spirit, we hope that the spirit they contain is actually practical. So, you know, if you're in an elevator and you make, you know, improvisers call this an offer. You notice something, you throw something out. It can be literally anything. It doesn't have to be clever or interesting, but if you are in the present and can remark or ask about something that's going on, there's infinite possibilities. So our suggestion is disrupt a little. You know, go get a little bit out of your comfort zone, and you got to be willing to fail. So the toe jam question, Jeffrey, it might not work, but boy, you might meet your new best friend.
But one of the rules of improv is that you respond with yes and you build on rather than block the suggestion of the person who started it.
Exactly.
You're not going to necessarily find that in an elevator, are you?
Exactly, but you can bring that yes and spirit. We live in a pretty no but or yes but world, a pretty closed off and guarded world for the most part. So it's up to us to bring that yes and spirit and to open things up. It's not always going to work, but our experience is it works more than you think. Chris and I rode in elevators and started up conversations as an experiment, and 99% of the people were not only happy to talk, but had really interesting things to say.
I was going to ask you how much you road tested some of this stuff. So you actually did do some field trials, as it were.
Yeah, we've been in the field. We've been in elevators. We've been in bars. We've been on subways, and we've stretched ourselves. It's not my natural inclination to strike up conversation, but when I've pushed myself to do it, I've been really happy. There is research about this. It's common sense, but they've studied when they've asked people to chat with strangers at the beginning of their day, their happiness levels were higher than those who didn't chat with others.
Really?
Yeah.
And did they pursue further? Is it because it's sort of like unwrapping a present? You got something new, a new person to talk to?
I don't know what the reason is, but I suspect one of them is we're social creatures, and when we connect, we feel better than when we're isolated.
We're talking to Rob Bedecker. He's the co-author with Chris Cullen of the book What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. We're just sort of broaching the subject now of trigger words and cold openings and strange things you might say to begin a conversation with somebody in an elevator or at a bus stop. And you're not trying to make people nervous. You're trying to make them laugh, perhaps. But here's Don in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Bedecker.
Hi. It's, you know, this is an interesting topic. I guess it's because part of me is Welsh. I tend to overtalk and overshare a little bit. But, and it's about the energy that you gain from this kind of conversation that, and you're talking about connections, and I think transcending that 6 degrees of separation is the most amazing thing. When you meet somebody you've never met before and you discover that you have some common friend or experience in some place, or, and you find out, it's a wonderful thing to discover the world through other people's eyes, I think, and have that connection in terms of transcending the fact that you don't know each other, and all of a sudden you feel like you've known each other a long time. You know? Do you have any openers that helps you to make those common experiences reveal themselves? I mean, is there a trick to that?
Yeah. Don, I think you articulated that beautifully, the way that when we find a connection with a stranger, it's really fulfilling on a deep level, and so often we have so much more in common than we would have suspected. And so how do you get there? How do you sort of scratch that surface? You can often be a little more personal than you might expect. This is in my experience. So if I ask you, what kind of car did your father drive when you were a kid? Or what was your favorite game to play when you were 8 years old? Or something, it's a little risky and a little more personal than we're used to, but that often opens up a lot about the personality of the person you talk to, their background, their social connections, and you can find a lot of doors to open from a question like that.
Don, thanks for your question and your comment. So Rob, there is a section on trigger words. So what are trigger words, just by definition?
Definition is a trigger word. I stole that word from your sentence, and now I'm going to riff on the word definition and talk about dictionaries, which I love. And I love the Oxford English Dictionary. I love compact dictionaries and foreign language dictionaries. And what I've done is stolen a word from your sentence. Sometimes it's with something I've prepared, or sometimes it's a way of provoking a thought in me. So I tried to do that with one of your words, and you're like a panther waiting to pounce on a word that you can then expound and expand upon. The key is paying attention.
And the trick is to choose your keyword carefully, because your trigger word carefully, because you mentioned the Oxford English Dictionary. If I start talking about Oxford shoes that I like, it's definitely not going in the right way, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm really curious to hear about your Oxford shoes. Are they white bucks?
Not quite white bucks. No, they're tan and sort of pinkish. I haven't quite broken them in yet. They're still sort of stiff.
Do you have a good way of cleaning them?
I'm not much of a shoe cleaner, truth be told.
Yeah, well, tell the truth. We're getting real here. but now we could talk for a while about shoes, or who knows, somewhere else. But at least we've taken it out of the normal comfort zones of, nice weather, isn't it?
Well, all right, so one of the other books that we had on in the last year talking about conversations was, you can always talk about the weather, but, I mean, to you, is that just sort of trite and boring to you and Colin? Chris, I mean.
Yeah, To Chris, it's trite and boring, but I'm going to defend the weather, and I think that it's a necessary sort of on-ramp sometimes. It's a safe topic. It's a shared experience, and, if it's really hot, it's worth mentioning. But we suggest going from small talk to big talk, and a way to do that, if you want to stay on the weather topic, is, again, to shift it into a little bit more of a disruptive mode, maybe sometimes personal. If it's really hot, I might be curious, you know, Jeffrey, what's the hottest day you can remember? Or, you know, did you ever get a terrible sunburn? I might try to probe a little bit into some personal experiences you have with the weather. And then it takes it out of the realm of abstract routine and into the more interesting realm of personal experience.
I see. So the routine is where it's just like, well, as you pointed out, you know, how are you doing? Fine. You know,
yeah.
How is your morning? Good. You know, you can give one word answers. You're just giving the routine. It is a rote response.
But and there's no calories there. It's just filler. So we want to, it's okay to start with that, but try to push further. That's our recommendation.
So you did mention small talk, and we do have a bit of a love-hate relationship with this. I mean, it seems like a lot of people say, oh, I just really don't like small talk. But the fact is that it is a way to get a conversation going. It really is all you have if you're just meeting someone at first, right?
Yeah. Well, you can also skip it. I mean, so if I'm in the elevator with you or on the bus, I could try for small talk. But then we might get sleepy, and we might both fall asleep, and the conversation might not go anywhere. Or I could say, those tan Oxfords you're wearing are interesting. Where'd you get those? And I could take a little bit of a risk and leapfrog right over the small talk and just try something unexpected.
Let us take a call. Here is Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Bedecker, the co-author of What to Talk About.
Hi, thank you. You know, it's true, being a comedian myself, we are sometimes shy and introverted. I often feel like Robin Williams when they said, tell us something funny. Be funny. It's like, hey, dude, I'm eating breakfast. They always expect you to be on. But what we've discussed before, Jeffrey, on a different show, like when I'm really nervous and shy in a big grocery store, boy, that broccoli sure went up in price, didn't it? And I always find with strangers, I always tell the truth. If I said, I love those shoes, I want those shoes. Where did you get those? And I mean it, because I find something that's honest for me, and it works. It makes me more comfortable, because I'm the one that's scared to death when I'm speaking out to a stranger, and they get relaxed, and then I'm relaxed.
All right. Thanks for the defensive small talk, Jeannie. Good to talk to you.
I love the point about honesty, too, Jeannie. It's often difficult to be honest, and it can relax us and open up new possibilities.
To go on something that you talked about earlier, though, Rob, I mean, about taking it a little more personal, if in the example of the broccoli, you know, the price of broccoli sure went up, the next thing could be something like, well, do you have a favorite way of preparing broccoli?
Yeah, or what is broccoli? I mean, you know, let's be honesty, as Jeannie recommended, is a nice strategy. And honesty about the limits of our own knowledge. Be honest about our ignorance. You know, I don't really understand what thunder is or how diesel works. Or, you know, if I'm really honest, what's the difference between GDP and GNP? If I can be honest about what I don't know, often my conversation partner might not know it either, and we can put our heads together and kind of try to figure things out between ourselves.
It seems like that you'd have to be careful in these conversations, particularly if you come, as I do, from a family of know-it-alls, where if somebody asks a question like that, you just go, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Here's the difference between GNP and GDP, and boom, you've killed the conversation.
Maybe, but, you know, maybe you don't want to be in a conversation with that person. it's a good filter. But look, you have to be open to two possibilities. I don't know how diesel fuel really works, but I might find someone who's an expert. Then I can learn. Or I might find someone who's comfortable admitting, you know, actually, I don't understand it either. And then we can create a conversation trying to figure out, using our wit and experience and natural intelligence, what it is, and there's a rich conversation that could come from you and I trying to figure out what diesel fuel is. I'm presuming, Jeffrey, you're not a diesel fuel expert, but I could be wrong.
No, but the question then would be, I mean, how clever do you let yourself get? Because it's easy to say, well, diesel engines are noisier, therefore I assume there are noise bubbles contained within the fuel.
That could work. And I might guess you've had some kind of traumatic experience with a noisy diesel engine.
Yes. When I had a diesel engine for about 16 years, it always felt like it was going to fly apart. It was so loud.
Now, see, now we have another path to follow. We might not even stay on diesel, but, you know, you had to warm it up in the cold weather, and now diesels are totally different. You know, I think they work by sort of compression versus a spark plug or something. I don't know. Why don't I know anything about cars? Shouldn't I, as a human being? That's a conversation topic.
You live in the Bay Area, though, so there's lots of public transportation around.
There you go.
And there's Rob Bedecker going. He's the co-author with Chris Collin of What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange and hear the rest of the interview in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. This hour is a conversation about conversations. Rob Bedecker, a comic actor, joined forces with journalist Chris Collin to write a frequently funny book called What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. We have some listener input from the original broadcast in 2014, but we can't take any new phone calls or emails today. Christy in Medford commented on a man's hat with her college on the front, and it led to a long romance, she reports. So there's another conversation starter right there. It's like, oh, did you go to Stanford? I mean, these are kind of obvious questions, aren't they?
Yeah, but obvious is okay. You know, to again borrow from the improv world, dare to be dull is sometimes a better mantra than, you know, I've got to be funny and interesting. Worked out for Christy. She found a romantic partner by making a comment about somebody's hat. Bravo.
Absolutely. There are times when I'll pass somebody wearing a Missouri shirt. And of course, the big call at Missouri is M-I-Z, responded to Z-O-U. And I'll say M-I-Z to somebody, and they'll look past me like I'm totally insane.
Well, maybe in that moment you are insane, Jeffrey, and that's okay. A little insanity is good fodder for conversation.
Well, so, I mean, if you feel like you do want to pursue a conversation with someone, and you feel like you've completely blown it in that first moment, what you said just went kaboom on you. I mean, do you try to come back from something else? Do you get a good laugh at yourself in the process and make that part of the conversation? I mean, what's a good way to continue if you should?
I would go back to honesty. You know, to laugh at yourself is a great strategy to explain, boy, I really thought I might go for a connection. Here's what I was doing, but I messed up. And that sort of humility and honesty will often take the conversation where it needs to go.
Now, you say in the book that difference spawns conversation. This is in the chapter on parties. Different in what sense?
Well, so much of us are kind of in the rut of our own heads, our own social circles. We see the same people, talk to the same people, and we can get a little bored with sameness. So difference in the sense of bringing something different to the party, literally, meaning, you know, an object, an item of clothing, a brightly colored shoe, maybe wearing different shoes. I'm just riffing here, but disrupting the pattern. And then, you know, we call it inputs. You probably have your regular sort of media and social inputs. You read the same paper, go to the same websites every day. Try something you haven't listened to, a music style that's unfamiliar, something your grandmother used to listen to. Read a newspaper from a town far away you've never heard of, and you'll start to disrupt your routines a little bit, and we think change your conversation.
You know, it's interesting when I think about this, particularly in the party context, it seems like a fair number of us, or maybe I'm just generalizing because it's something I do, is that we're a little reluctant to go up to people and make a comment about, oh, that's a really interesting dress, or, you know, boy, what does your tie say, or stuff like that. But the fact is that it always feels good that people take an interest in you with those sorts of lines.
That's a great point. And it's hard to get out of our own heads because we know that when people compliment us or start a conversation, we're usually grateful. But we, time and again, forget that from the other point of view. And it goes back to this idea of giving a gift to the other person. If your mindset is that, you know, conversation is a way of taking from people and subtracting and interrupting and burdening other people, then you'll show up in a very different way if your mindset is conversation is a way of offering them something new.
Interesting. So it's less about, gee, I'm sorry to bother you, but it's like, hey, I really would like to talk to you.
Don't you think that a lot of us go into social situations, especially new ones, where it's, you know, I don't want to bother anybody. I don't want to demand too much. And, you know, I'm taking a leap here, but for introverts, that might be even more the case, where, you know, I'm burdening someone by asking them a question, or I'm imposing on them, when in fact the opposite could be true.
Huh. You increase the comfort level by asking those questions rather than make somebody uncomfortable.
There you go.
Wow. One issue that comes to mind, obviously this book is about how to start conversations a lot and how to continue a conversation. You, particularly as a performer, probably have a pretty good feel for what is and is not working in a room. How do you know, or do you, when's a good time to stop something? It seems like every so often I hear somebody say, well, I don't want to monopolize you, which is usually the code for you have monopolized my time.
It is a good code. Well, in the theater, in the performance and comedy world, you know it's time to stop when everyone has left the theater and walked out on your show. And, you know, that's a good time to pack it up. Very clear signals. But it is true that you have to read an audience when you're on stage. You don't have to, but if you don't, you risk losing them. And we recommend putting a clean ending on conversation. Even if it's going well, it has to end. So simply say, it's been great talking to you, full stop, and walk over to the cheese plate.
Yeah, or the broccoli plate, whichever.
Or the broccoli plate.
Yeah. And you can talk,
so,
have a conversation
so
about that.
It's expensive these days, though, that broccoli.
It's rising, that's for sure.
It's gone up, yeah.
We have some calls here to take. Here's Jacob and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Bedecker, the co-author of What to Talk About.
Hi, good morning. Part of what to talk about is also what not to talk about. I find that, you know, a general rule of conversation with intimates or families or friends is, you know, you avoid politics and religion and sex and income, and you only talk about the weather. But I think as a comedian, you probably are free to talk more about sex and, you know, and about differences culturally. But the other thing that I wanted to comment on is regarding small talk. And we see small talk as kind of, you know, insignificant and, you know, something that you pass by. Hi, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? You know, that kind of stuff. But it's also a test, because if somebody doesn't do small talk well, they're not going to do large talk well. They're not going to do deep talk well. And there are a lot of people who actually cannot do small talk well. I mean, that's kind of what they do special education for, is they teach the kids how to say, hi, how are you? I'm fine. You know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the art of small talk is part of the art of large talk.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's pursue that. Thanks for the call, Jacob. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. I think those are really interesting points. I think compassion is important. We've all stumbled in the small talk phase, and we've all talked to people or been the person ourselves who has stumbled in the small talk section of the conversation, but actually we do have interesting things to say. So give people a little slack. But it is a kind of test. I think we are gauging people in that small talk juncture. As far as the big topics to stay away from, I think we can push further than we think. And you have to read your audience, and talking about sex or religion or politics is not always appropriate, but sometimes it is, and sometimes it can be a really interesting conversation.
In fact, you know, I had to ask it because there is a section about taboos in the book, or what people regard as taboos. I mean, do you sometimes break some of these taboos, especially with strangers, just to have some fun watching the reactions?
Yeah, you know, money is a big one. It's an even bigger taboo than sex in our culture. You know, we'll you know, spill our guts about our sex lives, but when it comes to our income and you know, money issues, we're really guarded. And I think, again, if you read the situation, you can go for it. You might fail, but our philosophy is you kind of pay it forward. If you give someone a strange experience, then they'll have something to talk about in their next conversation.
Their conversation could be, well, I saw this guy in an elevator this morning, and oh, my God, and away it goes.
Exactly. You know, this guy asked me how much I made a year, and that was really weird. And that might lead for him to a really interesting discussion. It just won't be with you.
Well, that is a pay-it-forward concept then, for sure. Here's Sharon in Jacksonville. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Bedecker.
Hi. I was on the road in my car. I'm still in my car. I had to pull off. I have the perfect solution for this. If you want to start a conversation with someone in an elevator or somewhere else, just say, I heard this interview on JPR with this guy who was talking about how to start conversations, and he mentioned diesel engines and Oxford shoes and sex, and which one do you want to talk about?
That's great. Give them a menu. They can double click on it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Your point is a good one. It's also more broadly about preparation. If you step into that elevator to that cocktail party with a starting point, again, you open up a lot of possibilities.
And Sharon, thank you so much for the call, and thank you especially for pulling off to the side of the road. I've always said to people, I really don't want the Jefferson Exchange to be a reason for somebody getting either a ticket or into an accident, which is another conversation starter. How many accidents has the Jefferson Exchange caused? Well, not many, we hope.
Right. You have that number posted on the wall, 0 accidents. 2007.
475 consecutive work days without an accident on the Jefferson Exchange. There is some stuff here about particular approaches to particular situations, and one of them is, it's interesting, physical approaches to shy people. This is really interesting, what not to do.
Yeah. Well, we say that, you know, there's a lot of nonverbal signals you're sending, and to really sensitive or shy people, you're shutting them down further before you've even opened your mouth. You come directly at a shy person staring boldly. It's like running at a baby deer with a Bowie knife. They're gonna tremble and bolt. So come at an angle. Be aware of your physical, especially if you're a big person or an extrovert. Be aware of how you're taking up the space, and you can come at an oblique angle and give them a little more space. That's sometimes enough to get them talking.
And then dinner party games that you list in the book. There's some fun stuff here. What are some of the dinner party games you guys have recommended here?
We like, you know, improvising a movie pitch. So if you're at a dinner party, there's a book on the bookcase. Just pull one off at random, open to an arbitrary page, and pick the first two words on the page. That'll give you the title of a movie. And then as a group, you've got to take turns creating the pitch as if you were going to sell this movie to Hollywood. Who are the main characters? Is it a romance or an action movie? And just develop the plot based on those arbitrary two words from the book. It's a way of kind of collaborating creatively that leads to great conversation.
And then there's a section here, I think this is in the travel section of the book, about the banned conversations.
Yeah. Well, you know, small talk when you're traveling has also worn into some sort of predictable ruts, you know, how different it is here versus at home, how interesting this local market is, and these sort of vague platitudes that we get stuck in, especially with fellow travelers. So we recommend taking it into more unexpected places.
Well, one of the recommendations that we raised in one of the promos for the show earlier this morning was to repeat your line about saying to somebody in a foreign country, teach me how to speak dirty in your language.
Yeah, see, that breaks the sex taboo. It throws them a little off balance. There's another one that I like, which is also unexpected. But if you're going to a place that speaks a different language, learn the phrase, may I help you, in their language. And you can go up to people on the street and say in their language, may I help you? Now, you're not going to understand the response, but there can be an interesting pantomime conversation that ensues.
Okay, I've done that myself where, you know, you say bonjour in authentic Quebecois, but then they give you two sentences back that you have no idea what they said, at which point you have to say, sorry, I only know English.
Yeah, well, you've got to then, you've really got to rely on pantomime or switch to Spanish or whatever it is, and something interesting might happen. It's not a guarantee, but, you know, you might meet a romantic partner, just like our earlier guest.
Okay, a couple of terms I want to get out of the way just in the minute we have left. Emotional fracking, what's that?
That's the idea that, like fracking for gas, natural gas, that you delve more deeply into personal conversations that have gotten stuck. You know, these could be with old friends, your friend you've known for 20 years, and you kind of are in the habit of just covering the same old conversational terrain. So our suggestion is push deeper. Ask some soul-searching questions. You know, we only go around once on this planet, and why not go deeper?
And part of this then is really getting outside of your own comfort zone, so that you not only you take a risk, but the reward is great because you get some comfort for yourself and for the person you're talking to.
I think that sums it up beautifully. That there's a risk here, but you wouldn't take the risk if there weren't a real possibility of a big benefit on the other side, which is deepening a relationship, deepening a connection, or discovering something new and interesting. And that's often really, really worth the risk.
Well, there's a lot of comedy in the book. There's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of serious purpose behind it as well. What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. Chris Cullen and Rob Bedecker wrote it. Rob, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
Jeffrey, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.